When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy Wednesday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. On the program today, we are going to look at the struggles of the Toronto Blue Jays. We are going to preview the NBA Finals that get going tomorrow, and we're going to preview the CFL season. We wrap up the preview today. So a lot of previewing going on and a lot of frustration, and that's how we begin talking about the Blue Jays. All right, enough is enough with this Toronto Blue Jays team. They get pounded by the Baltimore Orioles last night. 10-1 ends up being the final, and I have officially had it. Fire everybody. It has become so apparent that Ross Atkins has built a problem that is now too big for him to change and is too hopeless for this coaching staff to fix. That was abysmal last night against the Baltimore Orioles. This team has a payroll of over $230 million, and yet last night they had to go with Trevor Richards and Bowden Francis to get their brains beat in. And I bought the Francis improvement last year, but there is no option beyond that. And this has been a problem in this organization for a couple of years. They got lucky last year with health and were able to basically stay the course, even with Manoah having some struggles at times, and then Ryu came back. But the lack of starting pitching depth in this organization, has been a problem for years now, and they have failed to address it. And the fact that they aren't prepared to deal with an injury is a pathetic indictment on where this organization is at this point. And yes, we thought Bowden Francis would be better coming into the season. And yeah, we thought Ricky Tiedemann could help, and maybe Mitch White would be better. But still, you have now understood. Mitch White hasn't been on the team for a bit. Ricky Tiedemann's been gone for a while. And Bowden Francis has had some injury issues and has gone back and forth. So to have this understanding that pitching depth has been a problem for a long time now, and you are still rolling out there with Trevor Richards, who, by the way, is one more tweaked back away from basically being the closer for this team, which is in of itself an issue, but it is a horrendous mismanagement of this team that for 2 years they have been rolling with basically exactly five major league caliber starters in the organization. It is an indictment on the drafting and development and the asset allocation with the starting line, or with the rotation and with the roster for this team. It is dreadful. And the list of problems for this team, that one isn't even at the top of it. The offense is still dreadful. They haven't even been able to replace Brandon Belt. Think about that. Brandon Belt. They haven't even been able to replace Brandon Belt's production in this offense a year ago. That was supposed to be the gimme, and then you go out and get other guys to make this group better. But they don't even have a suitable replacement for a guy who was 2 wins above replacement last season. They haven't been able to do that. The internal growth that we were told was going to be coming hasn't happened. Kiermaier, worse. Springer, worse. Bichette, worse. Kirk, maybe leveling out, but worse. It has all been worse and worse and worse. Vladdy has stepped up, just not in the ways that you thought he would, and not in the ways that you constructed this roster to be able to take advantage of. A team that is supposed to be competitive at different points this season has relied on Ernie Clement and Daniel Vogelbach to get the offense going. It is just atrocious what this team is. Like, you look at it and you, excuse me, you look at the problems they are having in the rotation, in the lineup, in the bullpen. And there is no other conclusion to come to other than to say this is a bad baseball team. The bullpen is bottom third in the league. The offense is bottom, like, one or two in the league in some categories, but certainly bottom third in the league. The starting rotation is carrying them to be below 500, but they are still doing their damnedest to drag this team kicking and screaming into a playoff spot. And this series against the Orioles has shown just how dire this situation is. They feel miles behind the second place team in this division. There is no more sugarcoating it. There's no more running from it. There's no more hiding from it. This is an organizational failure at every level, from the top all the way down to the players on this roster. This has been putrid. To have what many thought was a golden ticket with a core with Vladdy and Bo and Gurriel and Teoscar and Biggio, you now have 25% of what you thought Vlad would be. Bo just can't get it going this season. You traded away Teoscar Hernandez for a relief pitcher who you just optioned a couple of weeks ago. You have dealt Lourdes Gurriel Jr. along with one of the top prospects in baseball at the time for Dalton Varsho, who, while is playing better, still only plays center field, the position that you kind of brought him in for, like once or twice a week. It has been a complete failure, and they have had 2 years to fix this. The people who are in charge of this should not have the opportunity to try to right these wrongs. They have had that opportunity time and time again, and they have not done it. And then you take a broader look at it, and the group that came in and yelled shame, shame to Alex Anthopoulos for giving away all of that prospect depth and draining the prospect resources to get this team to the American League Championship Series has done a piss poor job of drafting and developing, and they have really gotten them back to a spot where you would now feel lucky if they just get to the ALDS. So you don't have prospects that you're excited about. You don't have a roster that even looks like a playoff team right now. So what are they doing right? Not a whole lot, to be perfectly honest with you. They brought in Ryu and Springer, and look, like, the Gausman deal worked. The Barrios trade worked, I suppose. So they used some draft capital to get a starting pitcher. It was just an expensive one. The fact that they have had now 8 years of drafting and developing, and you have, for pitchers, Manoa to show for it, and eventually maybe Ricky Tiedemann, is horrendous for this organization. And the thing that should worry them the most, people are angry, but a lot of people just don't care. Like, we have had a massive break between Stanley Cup playoff games. There's no talk about this team. When they are going well, this entire country gets behind them. And the Blue Jays are an absolute television juggernaut. But when it's bad, there isn't anger. There isn't, how can we fix this? It is just, okay, we'll move on to something else. It's summertime, man. We get like 2 good months a year in Canada. So you may as well take advantage of it and just not worry about this team. That's where people are at right now. People don't care about the Blue Jays because why should they? Let's move on to basketball. The NBA Finals finally tip off tomorrow, so let's break it all down. Let's start with the Western Conference champion, Dallas Mavericks. And one thing we know in this series is Luka Doncic is going to be amazing, because he has been amazing, and he is amazing. I don't know how Boston stops him. And I think that is, I mean, there is no true stopping him. It does come down to how can you kind of limit him. Like the joke, you can't stop him, you can only hope to contain him. That is kind of what it is with Luka Doncic. And the thing that would worry me from a Boston standpoint is he and Kyrie absolutely wore down Anthony Edwards in the Western Conference Final. Like, Luka, because he is so physical, because he is so cerebral, he wears down whoever is on him. And so that is something I do think Boston has to take into consideration when looking at who they are going to put on him. But I think the real key in this series for the Mavericks, if Kyrie Irving is the second best player in this series, Dallas wins the NBA championship. Luka, we know, is the best player in this series. There is no questioning that. If Kyrie can be better than Tatum and Brown, that is a huge boost to them, and they win the championship that way. Honestly, even if he is third, if it goes Luka, Tatum, or Brown, and then Kyrie, and then the other one of the Jays after that, I still think Dallas wins a championship. Boston needs both Tatum and Brown to step up in this series, because you can pencil in Luka for 7 good games in this series and probably 5 great ones. So you now have to match that and then better the guy who's playing some of the best basketball he's played in half of a decade. Kyrie is such a weapon with this team offensively. If you want to come out and just blitz Luka and get the ball out of his hands, Kyrie Irving has been a threat, and the players around have picked it up, right? Washington has turned into a big shot threat. The bigs have been able to produce at the rim. This is a team that now has options. If you just try to just get the ball out of Luka's hands, okay, well, Kyrie can beat you, Washington's beaten teams, and the big guys can do their part. And another interesting part of this whole series, and maybe this is a part where I have gone too far into the Dallas propaganda, Kyrie is playing his ass off on defense, and I think that's going to be huge here. I don't think Boston can just try to isolate him defensively early on and think that they're just going to have an easy time of it. He's not Bruce Bowen. We understand that. He has improved on that end of the floor, but he's not going to be like, yeah, just put him on Tatum and it'll lock him down. It's not that, and I'm not saying it's that. But I do think that there have been times, whether it was Minnesota or whether it was the Clippers or whether it was OKC, that thought, okay, let's just get Kyrie and we'll take advantage of that, and off to the next round we'll go. And that's just simply not what it is with this Dallas Mavericks team anymore. Again, I wouldn't even go so far as to suggest Kyrie is a above average defensive player. But he is good enough that I think he is going to cause fits for Boston if that is the way they plan on attacking the Dallas Mavericks. The big question I have defensively for Dallas, what do they do with KP? And this has been the thing that we've been talking about since the beginning of the season, is how do you stop this offense when Kristaps Porzingis is going? When old Tingus Pingus is on a roll, what do you do with him? If you throw Lively or Gafford out at him, he's going to blow by them and get to the rim, and also it takes away your rim protection. So if you do get past Luka or Kyrie, that becomes a bit of a problem, because you have Lively or Gafford out by the three-point line trying to guard that guy. And then if they come in to help, it's a quick swing down over to Porzingis, and he hits an open three. This offense and this team is set up in such a way that they are so difficult to defend. And while the Mavericks, we've talked about it before, have improved greatly on the defensive side, and certainly have improved enough to allow their offense to take over in these playoffs, this is a different animal when you are talking about this Boston Celtics team. And so the other option there, do you put a smaller player on Porzingis and, okay, well, he's not going to blow by him? No, he's just going to bully them in the post and get a layup that way. And so I wonder, again, understanding he is not a good defensive player, I wonder if you put Luka on Porzingis. Again, not a good defensive player, but if KP is going to stay out by the three-point line, Luka is good enough that I don't think he just gets blown by. And if KP is just standing out there, Luka can kind of catch his breath a little bit at certain points. And I think then if KP wants to go down into the block, Luka is at least big enough that he can hold his own long enough to allow Gafford or Lively to come over and provide some help defense. The one part of it that would be an issue is that you would get Porzingis in every screen action ever, and then you have Luka isolated one-on-one with Tatum or Brown or whoever, and that's probably not how you want to live life in this series. So there is no easy way to defend this Celtics team, but I am really fascinated to see what the Mavericks do against Kristaps Porzingis. But the one thing, and I think this is true in almost every series that Boston goes into in these playoffs, Dallas has the coaching edge. Joe Mazzulla has deficiencies that haven't really shown. But I think things in that Pacers series at different times, while it was a sweep, at different points in games, specifically game one, I think really showed up because that shouldn't have been as close. And he just wasn't ready, while Rick Carlisle, I thought, coached circles around him. And now you're going up against Jason Kidd, who is not himself a phenomenal coach, but I trust him in these situations more than Joe Mazz. So how will that show up? But the big thing that I think kind of gets forgotten when we're breaking down this series, because Dallas has been such a fun team to watch, and the Mavericks have really got a lot of people behind them, and Boston, we've kind of been around this team for a while now, so it's weird that they've only been to one finals and we're already kind of sick of them, but people are just looking for a way to kind of, oh, well, Dallas could. I mean, look, they how are you going to defend? How are you going to whatever? I genuinely don't know how Dallas stops Tatum and Brown. I don't think they have the defenders to throw at both of those guys. Washington will be on one of them, and the other one, you just hope. That becomes, I think, the real here, the real issue here is this team has taken major strides, this team being the Mavs, has taken major strides defensively, but this is a completely different animal. The Celtics, when it comes to the offensive side of the basketball, are a one of one in the NBA this season. And like there is, yes, they played better defensively against Minnesota. And yes, they played better defensively against the Thunder. And yes, they played better defensively against the Clippers. None of those teams are Boston. And so how do you get this Celtics team to under 120 points a game? You kind of just have to hope that Boston has a cold day shooting from three. That's basically it. And so that is why, like, I have a ticket from the regular season with the Mavericks to win the NBA championship. I keep wanting to tell myself, like, no, this is, we're good. Like, that Dallas can win this series. And I said before, Dallas can absolutely win this series. If Kyrie Irving shows up and is just a baller, they could win. But then you get down to, okay, well, how do you stop, like, that's great that your two guys are going to get going. How are they going to even slow down the two best players on Boston? And your hope basically comes down to, maybe they'll stop themselves. That's basically what it's looking at. From a Celtics standpoint, this has a chance to be a defining series for Tatum. And I get he is still young, but he has been at that superstar level now for long enough that this is now an opportunity for him to really show that he can take this team to this level. This is an amazing basketball team that the Celtics have, and they are going up against a Mavericks team that should be sizable underdogs in this. This isn't 22 anymore. This isn't a team that's just happy to be there going up against Steph Curry and a dynasty in Golden State. This is the Boston Celtics are Goliath going into this series, and the Dallas Mavericks are playing the role of David, and they are looking to kind of upset things. Tatum has a chance to come out here and really put a stamp like, no. We're not messing around. This isn't the team of a couple of years ago that is all bright-eyed and whatever. We are champions. We are a championship-caliber team. I am a championship-caliber star player, and we are going to go that way. On the other aspect of it, I think Brown needs to stay hot. Like I said before, Kyrie can't be the second or third best player in this series. And look, I didn't think Brown had that level in him in the Eastern Conference Final. I've talked about this before. Yes, I understand that they didn't necessarily face the most resistance from that Indiana Pacers team, but to see that from Jaylen Brown, I thought was a leveling up moment for him. If he stays at that level, then this might honestly be a quick series because Boston could just roll with them. Brown and Tatum, I think, have to outplay Kyrie. That's how good we are assuming Luka is going to be. But if they can, which they very easily can, then this is going to be a really, really difficult Boston Celtics team to stop. The big question for them, what do they do with Luka? We can't even say how do you stop Luka, because you can't unless the referees allow you to have a chair out there. And even then, I don't, like, he would probably just run through the steel chair and get a layup. He is the best player in this series. He has been absolutely unstoppable. And so the question is, what do you do? Do you put Tatum or Brown on him and risk them getting just worn out and beaten up on the one end of the floor? Do you hope that, like, I would assume Holiday gets Kyrie. So, like, White, or do you put White on Kyrie, Holiday on Luka, and hope for the best there? I would imagine it'll be Tatum or Brown getting that assignment, and you just hope that they don't get beat up too much. The other part of it, in Minnesota, just let him get that mid-range. What do you do in the pick and roll? Because if you do just back off, he is going to annihilate you with mid-range jumper after mid-range jumper after mid-range jumper. He can hit that in his sleep and probably has before. But then when you if you pressure him on that, then it is a quick lob over the top, and it's Lively or Gafford. And it's an easy two. I was going to say, the way you do it, I guess, is you just, like, as soon as that pick is coming, you try to trap him. But as we talked about in the Dallas portion of it, then they swing it around and it's Kyrie or it's Gafford at the net or it's Washington, who has been knocking down shots all postseason long. So I guess you kind of hope that it lets everyone beat you, but this Mavericks offense is good enough that they could move it around and still get it back to Luka while you're doing all of your chasing and get a bucket that way. There is no easy way of doing it, but I am so interested to see how they try against Luka in game one coming up on Thursday. Another key for the Celtics is the help of Kristaps Porzingis. I have said before in the Mavericks breakdown, if Porzingis is healthy, this offense is damn near unstoppable. If he's not, that becomes a bit of a question mark. And it certainly, I think, evens things out a little bit. But if it is Porzingis being back to 100%, that is an even steeper hill to climb for Dallas. Because I said before, Luka and Kyrie, I think they can match and surpass Tatum and Brown. I don't know if they can match and surpass Tatum, Brown, and Porzingis. That's how important I think it's going to be. And then Holiday, can he stay at the level that he is at? He scored really well against Minnesota. He is going to have a really, really tough task defensively, but I do think that he is going to do a good job in this series, and he's going to play a very key role. And it's interesting, so many of the questions are around what does Boston do defensively against Dallas? Because a lot of it is just, okay, let's lock in on defense, and on offense, yeah, we'll figure it out. But this offense is good enough that they will be able to do that. But overall, this is going to be such an amazing series. I cannot wait to see how all of this plays out coming up over 4 to 7 games. I think the rest edge really, or the rest, sorry, with the extra time in between some of these games, I think that really does favor the Boston Celtics in this. They have had a rest edge before, although giving Luka a little bit more of an opportunity in the series to rest, that might be a bit of a dangerous thing as well, and might be a bit of a conundrum for the Boston Celtics, if you get just a rested Luka Doncic the entire way. I'm trying to find some MVP odds, and I apologize. I am, for some reason, having troubles finding it. But either way, this is going to be such an incredible series. I cannot wait. My official pick is Celtics in 6. So I am looking for a Tatum MVP the prop, I guess, to try to balance off my Mavericks one, so that I feel like a winner. But overall, like, this is going to be such a phenomenal series. So as the NBA season wraps up, the CFL season is set to begin tomorrow, and today is the final day of our full preview on the Canadian Football League season. Let's take a look.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, the CFL season gets going on Thursday, and we are wrapping up the preview today. It is, first, CFL difference makers. These are guys that, if they were traded to another team, immediate impact. Or guys who have made an immediate impact on their squad as well. So we will start in Winnipeg, which, looking at it, they have the most. Which makes my Grey Cup pick a little bit later on a little questionable, but we'll figure that out later. The first difference maker is Zach Collaros. That's obvious. It's 3 years in a row that he's been voted the best player in the league. If that's not a difference maker, then we just shut this whole thing down right now. I do believe Brady Oliveira is a difference maker as well. Being Canadian, and being that ratio buster of being an elite level player while also being Canadian in this league helps out. Also, he is just a gosh darn wrecking ball at the running back spot. Dalton Schoen, I think, is also a difference maker. He is a type of receiver that is so reliable and is someone that you really, really trust in big situations, whether it is in the red zone, whether it is second and long, or if you just need a big play, he can do all of those things. He immediately raises the level of any offense that he is in. And the last one offensively there is Stanley Bryant. Is he what he used to be? No, but I still think that his play on the offensive line makes a difference out in Winnipeg. On the defensive side, it's a couple of classics with Willie Jefferson and Adam Big Hill. Both of them certainly come winding down, and Big Hill dealing with some injury issues, but you put either of those guys on any team in the CFL, that defense automatically becomes better. Up next, the BC Lions. They only have a couple. On offense, it's Vernon Adams. I think that he is good enough that you put him in any offense and that offense gets elevated. Now, that is going to be tested in BC this season because they have lost a sneaky amount on the offensive side. So we will see what they are able to do. And this will be a real test of VA to see what level he actually gets to. And on the defensive side, I think defensive back Gary Peters is the type of defensive back that can make a difference on your team. And you feel good about him when you have him on the defense, which is, I mean, kind of an obvious statement, but you know what I mean. Out in Calgary, they actually have more than BC, but you will notice a trend. Micah Alway, Demario Houston, and Mike Rose, I think, are all difference makers. Alway, I think, is legitimately one of the best players in the league. Houston, I think, has a chance. Like, he has already kind of broken out, or not kind of. He has already broken out, but I do think that there might even be another level that he can get to defensively. And then Mike Rose, to put it very analytically, is just a gosh darn beast. So I think those three guys absolutely make a difference. The issue that Calgary has is they have but one difference maker on offense, and that would be Reggie Bagleton, who is just a stud as a wide receiver. Again, like Schoen, you trust him in all different sorts of situations. He is comfortable going deep. You can also get him on a couple of quick ones and put the ball in his hands and make him make plays. It helps out as well. I think offensively, he is really the thing that gets this team going. The problem is they just don't have enough on the offensive side out in Calgary. In Saskatchewan, I have three. Trevor Harris at quarterback. I think that became very apparent last season when he went down with an injury and this team went in the absolute tank. That one may be a bit more situational, like, and some of these are, right? Like, it doesn't necessarily just mean the best player in your position. Like, if you were to trade Vernon Adams to Winnipeg, he's probably backing up Zach Caleros. So, like, the stipulation for this exercise when it comes to quarterbacks is a little bit different. But I do think that this is going to sound so cliche, but his competitiveness, his desire to just like, hey, we're not losing today. I do think that makes a difference. And then he is so smart out on the field and recognizes different things defensively really, really well and has a real feel and an understanding for the game that just elevates everyone on offense around him. I think AJ Ouellette is a difference maker at the running back spot. I think that he is one of those game-breaking type of guys that is so important in the CFL. When you're handing it off in a two-down league, essentially a two-down league. I think more teams should go for it on third down, but that's a different story for a different day. I think that Ouellette is someone that can bust off a 6, 7, 8 yard run, and now you're in second and two, and the entire offensive playbook opens up. He's someone that you can give it to on second and four and still think you can get a first down. I really do think that he is a rising tide that lifts all ships. On the defensive side of the ball, it's Jameer Thurman. I picked him at on three down as my defensive player of the year, and so, obviously, I think he can make a difference on this defense. Out in Edmonton, they have three. First, it is Trey Ford at quarterback. Yes, the backup quarterback for the Edmonton Elks is a difference maker. You just watch what happened when he came in. There is no one like him in the Canadian Football League. Teams did not know what to do with him, which is why I think it is insanity that Edmonton went out and spent big money on a quarterback when they could have spent that money in other areas. But I think that Ford is someone who, like, he was coming along as a passer, and his legs and his scrambling ability and his athleticism make him an absolute weapon. Eugene Lewis is a difference maker as well. He improves every receiving room he is in. Another one that he is a safety blanket for your quarterbacks, and he doesn't need to be open to be open. Right? That's kind of the best way I can put it. And then Javon Leak as a kick returner. He's the only special teams guy I have on here. He is a real weapon for Edmonton that can shift fields. And especially when we get down to those ugly, ugly months here in Canada, he is someone that can really change a game very quickly in the old field position battles. Moving out east, Toronto. Chad Kelly, obviously. Not going to say much more on him. That situation continues to play out. I haven't had to say this one a whole lot. Falorin or Orimalade. There we go. Orimalade is just so studly on the defensive side. Him and Ceresna are both guys on the defensive side of the football that are just absolute monsters and 100% beasts on the Toronto defensive side, along with Winton McManus, who is he. I remember watching a game against Calgary and I was like, are there eight of this guy? Because he is just everywhere. Always. Those three guys are game wreckers on the defensive side of the football. They're pronunciation wreckers for podcasters like me who don't have to say their name a whole lot and just like hear it. And oh yeah, I can make my mouth say those names. But they are absolute game breakers on the defensive side. Out in Montreal, Reggie Stubblefield, Darnell Sankey, and Marc-Antoine Dacroix are all, I think, difference makers. I think that, again, complete game wreckers. When you group them all together, it is a real force out there. And I just think that they, all three of them individually and then together, elevate any defense that they would be on in the CFL. Out in Hamilton, Tim White as a receiver, big play fellow, whatnot. He is someone who I do think, again, would just be not only a game breaker, but he is a difference maker, drive breaker, whatever you need, he is that guy. And then defensively, Jamal Peters, one of the best defensive players in the CFL. I don't think a whole lot more needs to be said about that. I have two out in Ottawa. Adarius Pickett, on the defensive side, he is such a smart defensive player. He is such a athletic defensive player, and he is someone who just ruins things for defenses. He didn't get enough credit last year because Ottawa's defense was one of the worst we've ever seen. And offensively, I do think they acquired one in Dominic Grimes. I think he is going to have another real breakout season, and I think he is going to be a key to unlocking a lot in this offense out in Ottawa. Okay, I do this every now and then, but let's update it now. Who are the best players in the Canadian Football League today? Coming in at number 10, it is AJ Ouellette. Again, just a bowling ball of a running back. He has proven now over a couple of years that it is legit. He can run with speed, he can run with power, just a very complete player. Again, we got the Toronto guys in Ceresna and Orimalde. Man, I am really struggling saying that. I apologize, because these are two of the best players in the league. But together, both of them just absolutely ruin game plans on the offensive side. Tim White comes in at number 7 for me, one of the most talented wide receivers in the Canadian Football League, and someone who can just change a game like that. Dalton Schoen coming in at number 5. At number 6. He is the top wide receiver on this list, and for good reason. Just a do-it-all type of a receiver who has turned into such a reliable force out in Winnipeg. Also, get used to hearing Winnipeg names here. Not right now. Number 5, it is Winton McManus. I said in the breakdown of the difference makers that he is someone who it feels like there's 8 of him out on a football field. His reads are tremendous. His athleticism and just the nastiness that he can play with as well makes him one of the best players in the league. I do have Willie Jefferson high at 4. I know the TSN one had him at 9, but I still think that this guy, with what he can do defensively, 11 sacks last year. Now, it is part of an overall bigger thing out in Winnipeg, but I can't quit Willie Jefferson. He might be a little bit on the older side now, but he is still damn good, in my opinion. At 3, it is Brady Oliveira, the best running back in the Canadian Football League. His versatility is a real weapon, and I don't think it's just because he's been surrounded by a dynastic-type team out in Winnipeg for the last little bit. I think he is legitimately that good. At 2, it's Vernon Adams. Again, a guy who can do it all. Proved it last year that if he stays relatively healthy, he is as good as we thought he was. And number 1, quarterback who has absolutely found all of the potential that we were worried was wasted due to injury issues early in his career, Zach Kolaros. Talk about a guy who can make every throw out on the football field. He has the athleticism and all of it. And it has all meshed together with that big old brain of his to end up coming out with some phenomenal plays and making him the best player in the CFL. But that race between Kolaros, because all those things I just said about how we were worried about his wasted potential because of injuries, but he has now come out and combined the athleticism with a whole lot of smarts. You can say that about the two of them. We've just seen it more with Zach Kolaros. So now we've broken down the individuals. Let's get into the team win totals for the upcoming season. I do this in every sport. It's just the CFL one. It quicker. But now let's break down that this is basically just a division preview masked with gambling. In the CFL, we start at the bottom and work our way up. I think in last place, and this could be a bit of a surprise given the city I'm broadcasting from, I think in last place it's the Stampeders. I think losing the weapons they did offensively, even just in training camp here with the injuries, is a real hit. I think they have a very, very good defense, do not get me wrong, but I still think that they have lost too many pieces to be very competitive. I think the teams around them have gotten better, and we'll get to that in a second. But I think the biggest thing, I don't trust the quarterback. I have seen enough now of Calgary's mayor to just believe that this is not a quarterback that can lead this team anywhere that they want to go. So I don't buy the quarterback. I don't buy the weapons that he's throwing to. And I think the defense is very, very good, but not good enough to sustain with this offense playing that the way it does. So I have Calgary under 7 wins and in last place this year. The total for the Edmonton Elks is at 6.5. I'm going over. This team would have got over that last year if Chris Jones could have got out of his way and started Trey Ford earlier. Now they go with McLeod Bethel-Thompson, but this is still an upgrade at the quarterback spot. I do worry about this team defensively. I still don't think they have enough difference makers, like we talked about it before, in the difference makers part of this. Edmonton didn't have any on the defensive side. I worry about this team defensively, but I think offensively, they have enough that they'll be able to get right around 500. I have Saskatchewan going over 7.5. I think they get over that easily last year if Trevor Harris stays healthy. Corey Mace, I think, sets a tone for this franchise and absolutely gets this team ready to go. And I think that they made enough additions on the defensive side of the ball to improve things that they'll be able to move into a playoff spot in the West. It does still feel like they're a guy short defensively to really make some noise, but to get to 500, absolutely 100%. In second place, I have the Winnipeg Blue Bombers coming in under 12.5 wins. And this isn't like I don't think they go substantially under 12.5. I just don't see this being a 13-5 team this year. I think that they are going to have maybe a little bit less success against the BC Lions this year. I think that they have players that are aging, which like literally everyone does just based on how time works. But this is an old group that's getting older, and they have lost a couple of pieces along the way. And I think that's enough to just tick them a notch below BC. They're not falling out of anything. Like, they are going to be very competitive throughout the season. But I just think they go a notch below BC, who obviously now is my number one team in the West. I have them over 11.5 wins. I am concerned with how much they've lost, to be completely frank. Because they're, when you go through, it's like, well, sure seems like a lot of dudes who aren't there anymore who were really good last year. I think Vernon Adams is good enough to replace that. We saw last year was the year of quarterback injuries. If anything happens there, I mean, they're hooped. But you can say that about Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, Edmonton, Calgary. Toronto is dealing with it currently, not injury related, but you know what I mean. Like all these teams, if the quarterback gets hurt, like, yeah, it's not going to be ideal. So may as well just like predict along with everything anyway, because you can say that about every football team. I think the rest of it is still good enough to win the West and maybe beyond. Out East, in last place, I have the Hamilton Tiger Cats. So get ready for it, McMahon Stadium, coming up on Friday night. Two teams I predicted to finish last in their divisions going head-to-head. I have Hamilton under 8.5. I don't think this is a good football team. Scott Milanovich is a good head coach, but Orlando Steinauer I thought was a good head coach, and he couldn't get this team much beyond 8.5. So I have them under. I think Bo Levi Mitchell is just cooked. I don't think they have real viable options behind him, and I think this offense gets worse and worse as the years go on. So I... all the way out on Hamilton, which means Ottawa getting in there over 6.5. I have said before, they had one of the best off seasons of any team in the CFL. They have now built a foundation. I wish more of that foundation included anyone defensively, because that was a real problem for them last year. But with Brown and with Rhymes, they have started something there. And I think this team is competitive in the Canadian Football League this year. I have them over 6.5. Up next is Toronto. I have them over 8.5. I think Dinwiddie is a good enough coach that he can get this team to 500 if Cameron Dukes is the quarterback for the entire season. Chad Kelly not being there for 9 games at least, just from a footballing standpoint, is absolutely not ideal. Obviously, there are some real-life things going on with that, and just deplorable real-life things going on with that. But from a footballing standpoint, I still think this team, while they have lost, again, quite a few pieces in free agency, I do think that they are a team that still has enough there, especially with those game breakers that we talked about on the defensive side. I think they're going to win games differently this year, but they're still going to win games. Sorry. I have Toronto over 8.5. And so in first place, I have Montreal over 10.5. I am really buying in on Montreal taking a step coming off of that Grey Cup. I think Cody Fajardo, he's not going to move into the elite. He's not going to crack this top 10. He might make the difference makers list next year. But Cody Fajardo is someone who I think now, gaining that confidence off of the proof of concept of winning the Grey Cup, even if it was just 3 good games, I think that, along with Jason Moss and this excellent defense, gets this team to first place in the West Division. And so my playoff predictions, I have in the West semifinal, Winnipeg beating Saskatchewan. In the East semifinal, I do have Toronto over Ottawa. West final, BC over Winnipeg. East final, Montreal over Toronto. So a little chalky based on everything I've predicted. And your Grey Cup champions for the 2024 season, the BC Lions. I have them beating the Montreal Alouettes. So those are my picks. What, though, am I most confident in clicking on? Let's find out. We're bringing it back. It is today's ticket. All right. A couple of these I got earlier on doing the CFL previews. Hamilton, I got them at under 8. The total's now 8.5, so we're feeling better about that. We 8 wins doesn't get us a push anymore in the official prediction, but for what I clicked on, it's still 8. I have Calgary under 7 for all the reasons I just explained. Also, I think BC plus 450 is a good number to get them at as Grey Cup champions, so I pick the Lions as your Grey Cup winners. We also have a couple other notes for more immediately today. First, it is the Baltimore Orioles plus 100 over the Toronto Blue Jays. I know Berríos is pitching for the Jays. That doesn't seem to matter. This team is just not good enough to beat Baltimore. So I have the Orioles plus 100, and I have the Padres minus 1.5 over the LA Angels. Bit of a longer one today, but that's going to do it for Couch Potato Diary. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Remember to subscribe, whether you're listening in podcast form or you are watching on YouTube, and like this video or leave a review if you're listening in podcast. Follow me on social media. I am at Primetime Klein, and I will talk to all of you later. I am out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.